In an age where delayed gratification is a thing of the instantaneous past, the average human calls out to the top mobile operating system developer and screams, "We want it now." Google Corporation proudly presents, it's called a scheduled rollout for a reason. Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, Piper the DJ, one more time with episode 61 of Trending Mobile Technology right here on the TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. Now, typically speaking, those of us who've been in the mobile industry, or actually the technical industry for any substantial amount of time, we all know that technically speaking, when we come up with a concept or we put it into planning and preparation and execution, typically speaking, our most efficient route is the prime way to go. However, sometimes plan A doesn't always work. Plan B, plan C, plan D, sometimes plan E. And we hope by plan F that we do get some type of resolution. However, sometimes things come up. And my scheduled guest for this evening, Mr. Old School, he had a work pre-engagement pop up, and unfortunately he had to reschedule at the last minute, which is no big deal, because real life always trumps what else? The recreational life. So therefore I was able to reschedule Mr. Old School, and I went through and I picked up some of my own stories for this evening. And starting off the list, we're going to go ahead and jump right into it and get it on. I've got three devices I'm going to break down spec for spec and give a basic opinion on all three. We're going to put the Moto X against the Moto G against the new Nexus 5. Now, here's why I picked these three devices. A, somebody else has already decided that these devices should go against each other. They actually took the Moto X and put it against the Moto G, and then somebody else took the Moto X and put it against the Nexus 5. Now, I see pros and cons to all three of these devices. Now, understand, number one, I am a solid Note 2 user. I've been a Note 2 user for a very long time, and you'll get my Note 2 out of my hand when I'm dead and gone. I mean, well, I take that back. You won't get my Note 2 out of my hand when I'm dead and gone, but you're going to be hard-pressed to beat my Note 2, okay? Now, I went through, I've reviewed all three of these devices. I've checked them out. I've compared them spec for spec. I've come up with some pros and cons for all three, and here I go. First off, the specs. The Nexus 5, in case you've forgotten, ships with Android 4.4 KitKat. It has a processor of Snapdragon 800, 2 gigs of RAM, comes in 16 and 32 gig storage sizes. The display is 445 PPI with Gorilla Glass 3. Camera, 8 megapixel in the rear and 1.3 in the front for a total of 720p recording. Bluetooth is 4.0 and it comes with 802.11 ABG and AC, dual band, and Wi-Fi Direct with all the GPS conglomerates that go along with it. It does support NFC and contains accelerometer, gyroscope, proximity, compass, and barometer. It contains a 2300 mAh non-removable battery and tips the scales at 4.59 ounces. The Moto X breaks down as follows. Operating system is 422 Jelly Bean. At this point, no word on a 4.3 breakout. The processor is a Qualcomm Pro, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 and 32 gig sizes, just like the Nexus 5. You're looking at 312 PPI with Gorilla Glass version 1 on it. Cameras like this, 10 megapixels in the rear, 2 megapixels in the front, both supporting 1080p. Bluetooth is 4.0. The Wi-Fi is 802.11 ABG and AC dual band and Wi-Fi Direct, just like the Nexus 5, with all the GPS as well. This also supports NFC. Now, here's where the big difference is that I saw. Well, it's not a big difference, but it is a caveat. Your sensors, you have the accelerometer, gyroscope, proximity detector, compass, barometer, and you may add temperature. Now, personally speaking, the temperature isn't that big of a thing for me, just for the simple fact that if I want to know what the temperature is, I'll pull it up in Arcus. Some people, though, they need that instantaneous feeling, okay? This one also has a non-removable battery, but it charges at 2200 mAh, and it also tips the scales of 4.59 ounces. So between those two, we've got a pretty good layout of the land. But here's where it gets interesting, because this is the Moto G, which, by the way, is supposed to be arriving in the United States or North America in time for holiday season 2013. As a matter of fact, I think it's hit a couple carriers already, but I'm not quite sure. Here we go. We have 143 grams. The screen is 4.5 inch, 720 by 1280. pixels, which is the same resolution as the Moto X, giving it a 312 PPI. Okay, so we've got similarities that are starting to show up already. This comes with 4.3 currently, but it's supposed to ship to the United States, North America, with Android 4.4. Comes in 8 and 16 gig sizes without an SD card. Snapdragon 400 with a gig of RAM, 802.11b, G, and N with NFC support. You're looking at 1.3 megapixels in the front, 5 megapixels in the back with Bluetooth 4.0, and the battery is 20.7 mAh. Micro USB, and here's the big one, $180 off contract. If for nothing else, this dollar makes it impressive. Now, remember, $180 off contract for the Moto G, $620 off contract for the Moto X, and $450 off contract for the Nexus 5, depending on where you're at. Typically $350, but they also have the 16 and 32 gig sizes. Don't forget that. Now, spec for spec, these three devices offer three different things. The Nexus 5, obviously, it is a pure Google experience. It has the Android 4.4, it's got the quad core, it's got the 2 gigs of RAM, okay? However, you put that against the Moto X. Now, here's my big thing between Moto X and Nexus. Moto X and Nexus, Nexus is pure, Moto X has the Moto sauce. I don't remember what it's called, but the Motorola sauce is on the Moto X. Yes, I know I keep saying it. Thank you once again, Mr. Old School, for giving me the term, and it's just going to stick with me, just for the simple fact that, hey, why not? So the Moto X has the Motorola sauce on it. That's just the way it works out. The Moto G, same thing. However, here's the thing. $180 off contract, available to all carriers. Well, available to most carriers with the exception of Verizon. Moto X is available to all carriers, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, U.S. Cellular, and many other small ones. Nexus 5, available AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, and others. No mention of Verizon. Here's the problem. Even though the Nexus 5 is the next step in the Nexus project, even though the Moto X has the capability to go on Verizon, even though the price comparison on the Moto G is only $180 without any type of contract, it's unlocked and ready to go wherever you want to, entry-level device, my vote goes to the Moto G. Here's why. If you don't know what you're doing, obviously you don't want to invest a whole bunch of money into a device that you might not like the operating system. This boils down to the following. Again, what do you want your device to do? One thing that Mr. Old School and I were in correspondence over this past week, he cited, quote, "I'm going to be looking for a new device beginning of 2014. Maybe we could talk about it." Absolutely. Sure thing. Now, he's a longtime BlackBerry user. He does have a Nexus 7, mind you, but he is a longtime BlackBerry user. So I might have that staring me in the face with certain problems, issues, whatever you have. But nonetheless, the bottom line remains that what you want your device to do. Do you want to drop $600 on a device and might not even be able to like it? I mean, if I have somebody coming to me that's either currently in Windows, BlackBerry, or iOS, all right, my first selection would be this Moto G. Because it's inexpensive, they're not going to feel like they're investing a whole bunch of money in it. Now, if you put it against a budget like mine, yeah, sure. But the bottom line is, this is a great entry-level device. It's not like top of the line, but it'll give them a good taste of what Android has to offer. Okay, the Nexus 5, if you're wanting a performance device that has pure Google experience, a vanilla experience, then that is also where you want it. However, if you want the Motorola features, the Moto sauce, then you want to go to the Moto X. All three devices do have their pros and cons. All three devices do have your own determination as to what you want out of your device. Entry level would definitely be the Moto G. Moto X is definitely a higher end, but in my opinion, the Nexus 5 with the 4.4 pure Google experience does win as far as high tech. It also has the quad-core processor and 2 gigs of RAM built into it. Okay? Quite a few different catchphrases I'm going to be using throughout the night, and just quite a few different things that have been happening throughout the week. Number one, I'm going to be using the word unlocking. The reason being is device unlocking is in the news again. And the reason being is this is a story that I've been following for about a year. And the reason why I've been following it is because it affects the developer community in ways that, unfortunately, it shouldn't affect, but it does. Another term that I'm going to be using today a lot is a systematic rollout. And what that is instead of sending something out to everybody, you're sending it out to X amount per day. And here's how this is going to tie together. FCC Chairman, brand new, Tom Wheeler, this is for the United States federal government, Federal Communications Commission, sends, quote, a stern letter to the CTIA urging phone unlocking reform. Now, Mr. Wheeler has brought this up again, A, because it's crossed his desk I don't know how many times, and B, it's just something that needs to be tended to. And here's what's going on. He says, quote, provide clear, concise, and readily accessible policy to unlocking. Number two, unlock mobile wireless devices for customers, former customers, and legitimate owners when the applicable service contract, installment plan, or ETF has been fulfilled. Number three, affirmatively notify customers when their devices are eligible for unlocking and or automatically unlock devices when eligible without an additional fee. Number four, process unlocking requests or provide an explanation of denial within 2 business days. And number five, unlock devices for military personnel upon deployment. These 5 items are all primarily sensible. Here's a little bit of backstory on the situation. I want to say about 2 years ago, when the smartphone boom initially started, individuals were getting a hold of primary devices, premier devices, smart devices, top-of-the-line devices. They would take them out, they walk in, let's just say AT&T, for example. Now, number one, AT&T is not known for being economical or affordable when it comes to their price plans. So, therefore, people would go in, you know, they'd put the money down for the deposit and get the device, et cetera, et cetera. All right, let me back up again. Hold on. Way back when smart devices began making their push, there were problems with ownership. And basically, if you were to go to AT&T and you get a device, you put the down payment on, you get it on subsidy, et cetera. And for those who have questions about subsidy, let me know. I had a great big breakdown concerning prepay versus postpay, et cetera. I can go through that again if you've forgotten or if there's new listeners, but as it stands right now, I will leave that for you to recall at your own leisure. And what they would do is they would take these devices, they'd unlock them, forfeit the contract, and go off someplace else and utilize the device on a different carrier. Through the terms of unlocking, they can do that without any problem. However, the carriers, in this case Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint, were having problems with it for the simple fact that if you think about it, if they go selling a feature device for $100 on contract, expecting to be able to get over $2,000 off of that device in the long run, and somebody walks in, puts down a deposit of $100, takes the device for $100, pays their first month service for $50, that's $250, and they are out over $1,000. So they got their panties in a bunch, raised a big old stink saying, okay, even though you have this on contract, you don't own it. Now, most of your individuals cite that ownership is 9/10 of the law, which is true. If I have a device on me typically saying it is mine, I'm going to do with it what I want to, and there's nothing that you can, you know, am I one of those that goes in and does this? No, I'm not. Okay, every contract I've had, I've satisfied. I fulfilled it and managed it and taken care of it the best I could and then moved on, all right? However, the biggest problem that we're looking at here is carriers are having the biggest stink over this because everything that's stated in this memo by Mr. Wheeler, precise and clear, ready-to-access policy on unlocking, okay? Number one, that is not available. Now, carriers have known that device unlocking has been a dominant and predominant function within the developer community for a very long time. For the simple fact that not all ROMs are created equal, okay? I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. I'm on the Jedi X ROM for my Note 2. That ROM is not compatible with every carrier that's out there in the continental United States, okay? That's the way it works out. Some are GSM compliant, others are CDMA compliant. It just all depends. And this whole thing, there is no precise, clear, concise, accessible policy concerning the topic of unlocking. Okay, the carriers have yet to do that. They just presume that their customers are going to stay loyal. However, customers are getting smarter, folks. Okay, customers are starting to realize that not all carriers are worth the same amount of money. Now, while different carriers might get different feature phones at different times, sometimes the price is not as affordable compared to another carrier. Now, the device would be the same, but perhaps, let's just say, for example, the Note 3, when it came out, it hit Verizon first in my area, okay? If I were an AT&T or a T-Mobile customer, T-Mobile, which I am, I could go get a Note 3 on contract for $50 or $100, pay the whatever security deposit, etc., and then break my contract with Verizon and come over and put it on T-Mobile with the unlocking process. That gyps Verizon out of their contract money, okay? So this is, you know, designing a policy is what this is getting at. And there isn't a policy in place as yet, okay? That's the whole thing. This is just for the protection of the carrier. This isn't for the protection of the user. This is protection of the carrier, defining when it is okay to unlock and why. Number two, he cites unlock mobile to wireless devices for customers, former customers, legitimate owners, when applicable service contract installation plan ETF has all been fulfilled. This is something that carriers are assholes about, okay? I have gone into multiple carriers. I've gone into Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile. No, I'm sorry, not T-Mobile. U.S. Cellular, before I was a Note 2 customer. Had money in my pocket. Walked into the store, put the money on the counter, and said, I want to buy a Galaxy Note 2, and I'm going to pay you to unlock it. And they refused. Refused. I was willing to pay outright price for the device, and they blatantly refused. Number one, poor customer service. Sorry, if you got a guy who puts $1,000 on a counter and asks you to buy the device outright and perform a service, what would you rather do? Would you rather cover your own ass or make the sale? When I investigated further and asked why, they said, well, we prefer to keep these devices for our customers. If we unlock this device for you, we don't know where it's going to go. Who cares? Who cares? I'm the customer. Give me the device, perform the service. I'm asking you to. I'm willing even to pay you to. You don't want to? That's your loss. I wound up taking my money someplace else, and I bought the device, and nobody got the commission on it. Yes, if you work in a wireless provider here in the United States, 90% of the time, you are on some form of commission or some form of residual income concerning the service. You don't want my money? That's fine. I'll go find someplace else and somebody else that'll take it and perform the same thing and not share any of my money with you. Number three, notify customers when devices are... Now, this is... Yes and no. Okay, you don't have to let the customer know because most of your customers don't care if they can unlock it. All right, if they want to, they will anyway, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Process unlocking requests or provide explanation within 2 business days. If they can't do it, why can't they do it? They gave me a legitimate reason. Oh, we can't do it because we want to save these devices for our customers, which, in my opinion, is a bullshit excuse. I'll say it. I'll be completely honest. I don't care. My opinion, you got the money in your pocket. You're willing to pay for the service. Guess what? I'm going to make the sale. I don't care. All right? You got the money in your pocket and you want it? Hey, what do I got to do? I mean, it's easy enough, right? Of course it is. So this 2 business days for denial, no. You just explain it to them. If they don't like it, have a pre-prepared statement or whatever, or letter saying, here, this is explanation of our TOS, etc. But, you know, don't be dumb. I mean, somebody walks in, puts $1,000 on a counter, says, I want to buy this device outright and I want you to unlock it. Don't tell them no. That's passing up a sale, isn't it? It's like going to Walmart. Picking up a TV, putting it in the cart, taking it out, saying, I want to buy this. And they're saying, well, the TV is $900. You want to pay with $1,000. No, I can't make this sale because I don't know what you're going to do with that TV once it leaves that door. What? I mean, really? Last of all, unlock devices for military personnel upon deployment. This is important, okay? The United States military has soldiers all over the world. We have people going everywhere, all right? Upon deployment, what this means is this gives the soldiers ability to utilize their device in a foreign country. On the GSM network, notoriously, soldiers will leave the United States, go to Europe. Now, over in Europe, they have a GSM network as well. However, the problem that we run into with that situation is American SIMs do not work overseas. So therefore, soldier would need to pop out their United States SIM, put in a European SIM, and move on with life. If their device is locked, they don't have that ability. The way things are currently, they could do that, but they could also find themselves in a lot of trouble. What this is giving them the contingency to do is unlock their device before deployment, and it's carrier certified. Yes, this is a good thing. This is something that carriers need to do. This is something that has been haunting the developer community for over a year, and Mr. Wheeler is on the right track with this. This is something that people need to understand. This is something that would be a good thing, all right? This would benefit the people. This would clarify a lot of things. Consequences for actions that are outside of the contract. I mean, because right now, if you unlock your phone, you are subject to have your device disconnected, whether you're in a contract, a good customer or not. It don't matter. Sorry about your damn luck, but if I'm doing what I'm supposed to, this is my device, you know, there's no determination here. So, you know, if they can clarify all these things, that would help out a lot better. Last week, we talked about the LG G Curve, the banana phone. That's going to be coming to the United States here rather soon. It's supposed to have 4.4 on it, and LG says it should be hitting sometime soon, not quite sure when. But also, if you are an AT&T customer on the Galaxy S4, you're supposed to be receiving the 4.3 update. Now, benefits with this, Galaxy Gear support, okay? Do you want the Galaxy Gears? It's something that's important to you? Well, the 4.3, it's going to be the official update at this point in time. Build number JSS15J.1337UCUEMJ9, a whopping 719 meg. So make sure you're hooked up to Wi-Fi before you hit that update button. This is supposed to also give you Knox, as well as latest features and newest version of Android, and it's coming soon. Pause. I got the screenshot on this about the device. This is a legitimate 4.3. However, be careful, because there's a rumor floating around citing that some of the quote-unquote Galaxy Gear compatible updates are not 4.3. If you're one of those that gets stuck in this, you need to contact Samsung. Don't contact your carrier, because your carrier don't know and they don't care. All right? That's just all there is to it. This is something that Samsung is rolling out. Yeah, sure, it's got to go through AT&T because A, it's going over their network, and B, it's got to have the AT&T sauce on it. However, this is something from Samsung. If it screws up, you don't get the right build, that's between you and Samsung. My solution to this, root it, ROM it, move on. You might not have the Galaxy Gear, but, you know. And here's something else. Okay, I've been really hard on watches recently. I've been very hard on watches. I've been harder on watches than anything, and here's why. Because they don't have the features. But here's Galaxy Gear came out, I'm just like, bloatware, bloatware, bloatware. I've said it, I'll say it again, bloatware. The third-party apps, the stupid sauce, thank you, Mr. Old School, bugs me to no end. Now pause, shift gears really quick. Pebble Watch. Pebble was one of the first smartwatches that came out. They've been updating their firmware, making it more compatible and more understandable and usable, integrating it more with Google Now. More on Google Now and the Google Experience Launcher in a minute. But Pebble. This is a situation where you need to be careful, because Galaxy Gear, which is the Samsung solution to the watch, while they have updated their firmware to bring, quote, rich notifications from any app to the Gear, unquote. And here's what I mean by this. When Galaxy Gear first came out, you paired it with your device. Boop, you've got mail. would show up on the watch. But you'd still have to pull your phone to figure out what the notification was. You have an incoming phone call. No caller ID notification. You'd still have to pull your phone to get the notification. The notifications were dumb, stupid, a letdown. But now Galaxy Gear's been updated to where you're getting better notifications. You've got mail. Touch here to read. You've got a new text message. Touch here to read. Incoming call from Mr. Old School. Do you answer or decline? Pebble Watch, on the flip side. Compatible not only with Android, but also iOS, Windows, and I'm pretty sure BlackBerry as well. One of the innovators has updated their firmware yet again to where they have incorporated swipe technology and more integration, better integration with Google Now. This also is it's a trusted Bluetooth device as well. Here's what I mean by that. Pair your Pebble Watch with your Android device. All right. Average range of Bluetooth is 30 foot, give or take, depending on where you're at and what type of device you're using. But under normal circumstances, 30 foot. If your phone or watch get outside that 30 foot radius, your device will lock automatically. However, within that 30 foot range, your device will stay unlocked. Same fundamental physics the Moto Skip follows. Keep it in close proximity to your device. As long as the device remains where it's supposed to be, your device will be unlocked. I don't know how many times I get irritated with the fact I'll put my device away and I'll have to pull it out for something and it'll be locked. I have to unlock it, put in my passcode, and off I go. Trusted Bluetooth gives your device the option to remain unlocked as long as it is paired with that trusted Bluetooth device. Now, question. Are all Bluetooth devices created equal? Are all Bluetooth devices trusted? Answer, no. Hands-free sets typically are not trusted. Keyboards typically are not trusted. Bluetooth mice typically are not trusted. Must be a certified, registered, Bluetooth-safe, compatible device, such as Pebble, such as Galaxy Gear, if you have a Note 3 or Samsung Galaxy S device. Not all Bluetooth devices are created equal. Therefore, not all Bluetooth devices will react the same way when it comes to this. Yes, I know I'm sounding really ranty on this one, and I apologize, but there's a lot of things I'm trying to get through here, and I'll do the best I can with what I have. However, Galaxy Gear has updated their notifications, giving you rich notifications from any app. Pebble Watch does the same thing now. Put the two side by side, which is good. Galaxy Gear, it's got full color. Pebble Watch has that ink. However, Pebble Watch, you can get 3 to 4 days on a battery. Galaxy Gear, you're lucky if you get 12. My vote at this point in time in the stage of the game goes to the Pebble Watch. Why? Because Pebble Watch, frankly, it's looking a little bit better. Here I go again, folks. I got that proprietary stuff on the mind, the sauce. Galaxy Gear, it only works with particular devices. You know, Bluetooth device, Bluetooth safety, you know, security, all that kind of trusted devices. Yeah, I'm all up for that and I'm down with it. But my problem is, if I get a Galaxy Gear watch, that means I'm stuck in the Android ecosystem, the Samsung ecosystem, until that watch breaks. Pebble, I've got a Note 2 device. I've got a Nexus 7. I'm seriously considering adding an iPad Air to my ecosystem. Yes, the words came out of my mouth. Time's ticking. But I could utilize this Pebble Watch as notification manager for the iPad Air as a Bluetooth trusted device. Can it happen? Oh, yes. The technology is there. Is it something that I would love to be able to play with? Oh, yeah. So having that trusted device right there makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, you get outside that 30 foot, automatically, boom, it's off. You know, somebody comes in and wants to gank your wallet, they gank your wallet, but once it gets outside that 30 foot, it locks down, which takes me to another story that I do have concerning Google Wallet. Remember a few months ago, how Google Wallet tried to make a run, but it couldn't, and then they decided to put down a card, and it wouldn't work? Well, here we go. Manufacturer's Coin. This story coming in off the Android Police. And I quote, 6 months went by without a step until eventually the project was canned. Thankfully, awesome ideas don't disappear just because one company decides it's not ready to make it happen. Coin. startup out of San Francisco, announced a card of its own to promise to deliver much of what we were excited to see Google pull out for themselves. Now, Coin, here's the physics behind this. It doesn't look that different from a typical credit card, but it can store the information of up to 8 different credit cards. You take the device, you pair it with your smartphone or your tablet. It is a trusted Bluetooth device, meaning you get outside that 30-foot range, the card becomes ineffective, unable to be used, and your device locks. Okay? Device itself, small screen, displays 4 digits of each card, so you know what you've got. Program the card, give it to the cashier, swipe, off you go. It works with Square, PayPal, etc. There's a couple other programming quips and quirks that are in there. But it is, basically you can take 8 of your debit cards, condense them down into 1, and it'll work fine. Bluetooth trusted device, so if it gets outside that 30-foot range, it locks down and is no longer usable. It can be utilized as long as you have it paired with your smart device. So you've got safety and security. Caveat, $100. I mean, that's the way that works out. So, you know, as we're moving on, things are getting better. Some things are getting worse. Other things are getting better. Okay. HTC, by the way, they've gone on the books officially, citing that they have delivered their Google Play Edition version of 4.4 to the folks at Google. If you recall, story come in by HTC, and I quote, "We've delivered KitKat code to Google for HTC One Google Play Edition. Timing to push to the VA Play Store will be determined by Google." HTC's on top of this. HTC is ahead of the rollout. HTC has gone on the books and said, "We are committing to our devices to keep them up to date." I mean, at this point in time, they're even beating my Nexus, because my Nexus is still on 4.3, all right? Now, 4.4, it's on a scheduled rollout, structured rollout, okay? Which, you know, is fine. I'm cool waiting. A lot of people putting Google under fire right now, citing that, oh, well, you know, when iOS, or when the folks at Apple release a brand new operating system, they open it up and leave it to everybody. Why can't Google do the same thing? Why do they have to do this structured rollout? Why do they have to be so limiting? Why do they have to why? Look, time out. If you don't like it, root your device, ROM it, download the ISO, and sideload it. Now, mind, you take the chance of breaking your device. Otherwise, just be patient. Be glad you're getting it. Because as far as I'm concerned, on my Note 2, 4.4 has yet to be even thought of with Samsung. We still got to get to 4.3, folks. And you're sitting there complaining? So the bottom line is HTC is being proactive. They're being active when it comes to keeping their devices up to date. And this is where the root community and the developer community is going to have a little bit of a problem here. But as far as Samsung's concerned, you know, they still have yet to come out and release 4.3 to a majority of their devices. Yeah, sure, it's rolling out to some of the S4s. Yeah, sure, the Note 3 is being released with 4.3, but they're still 2 builds officially behind. A lot of their devices didn't even get the 4.2 rollout, okay? I mean, and this is where this is where a lot of the situation and a lot of the problem is going to start rolling out and rolling in. Here's why. And this is going to come up again, and it's going to come out. I'm going to try and hold off on this rant until I actually get there. But Samsung is cornering themselves, okay? HTC, they were almost to a point of irrelevancy. Almost, all right? But they've come back. They've brought themselves up. They've got a couple good devices that they're pushing hard. HTC One. I mean, the Google Play Edition, it's going to get 4.4, and it's going to be one of the first devices outside of Project Nexus that's going to have their update. Even Project Nexus. My Nexus 7 has yet to receive the 4.4 update. And some of the original, the first Nexus 7s still haven't. But here's the thing. There's way you can download the ISO and sideload it onto your Nexus 7 if you're going to be impatient. But personally speaking, I would rather allow somebody else to break their device, getting in a hurry. And it's not that I'm going to sit and I'm going to point at them and laugh. All right? It's not that. But the bottom line is, patience is what wins this game. Being impatient, getting a hurried device, getting a hurried product is what's going to get you into a problem. Now, yes, I'm rooted, I'm ROMed, I'm that way for a reason. Am I saying I'm impatient? No. But there's reasons why I do this. Number one, I don't like all the sauce. Again, Mr. Old School, thank you for the term. I don't like all the sauce. I don't. I like my device to operate the way that it's supposed to operate, and all the extra crap can go away. That's why I like Project Nexus so much. However, and this is where the other caveat comes in for me, Nexus 5 doesn't have the battery on it that I need. I need a battery that's going to be able to hold up. I need a battery that's going to be able to last the day. And all I want is 12 hours. That's all I want. But as it stands right now, Nexus 5 can't hold up with the battery. I've seen a couple 12-hour ratings, but that's only under certain situations. Note 2 wins, hands down. But the thing is, still, and this is what's going to get into another story that I've got here, concerning recently discovered vulnerabilities, quote, that allow any app to gain root privileges with super user or super SU. This coming in from XDA developers off the Android Police, and I quote, according to a developer on XDA, the vulnerabilities allow for malicious app to obtain root access without going through proper channels. You wouldn't see the notification at all. However, the app could do just its business in secret. Super user from Chains DD is no longer in development, but some folks are still using it on 4.2 and lower. All right, Chains D SU doesn't work on 4.3 and above. Root package contains several privilege checks to determine if an operation should be allowed. There are tunable vulnerabilities here. Utilizing Clockwork Mod and other environment variables that could bring into effect behavior, moderately complex subprocesses, manipulation of boot class path. Now, two things to get around this. One, Clockwork Mod is the exploit this is being used under. I personally utilize TWRP. Number two, make sure that you are updated past superuser 1.0.2.3 and your super SU is past 1.69. Now, if that's only if you're under Android 4.2. If you're over 4.3 or 4.3 and above, you don't have to worry about it. Ultimately, you as a user, as a developer, rooted, ROMed, whatever, you need to be careful what you're downloading. If you just download any old thing, okay, for one, I don't need Chains DD to operate my device. And that's where the exploit is. Okay? Super SU has been patched if you're past 1.69. Now, I like Super SU, for one. There is a free version and a paid version. I support the paid version because I think it does great. Super SU past 1.69, no problems whatsoever. Chains DD, if you've got it, that's where the problem is. Check your stuff. Update if necessary. Get out of Clockwork Mod. Get into TWRP. TWRP. Okay? Now, am I saying that you need to be conscious about everything that you're doing? Here's the thing, folks. If you're going to be rooted and ROMed, there's a couple things you need to remember. Updates are your responsibility. It's not the type of thing that you're going to get OTA. You've got to do a little bit of investigation. I've said it before. I will say it again. I utilize Jedi X ROM. We're on build 20 by now. Typically, sometime between the 20th and the 29th of every month, that's when our update comes out. I download the update and install it, typically within 72 hours of release. Do I do it right away? No, because A, I don't have the time to get it right away, but typically I do. It's not something that can happen automatically. I have to actually go to XDA, download the ROM, and sideload it myself. Do I do it? Yes, I do. Why? Because it keeps all that crap out of there. So keep an eye on your ROMs. If you're rooted, if you're ROM, be careful, because there is malware that's out there and there are vulnerabilities that you could run into. All right, how to beat it? Make sure that you're staying up to date. You guys that are out there that are stock, if you're under 4.2.2 and you're stock, time to upgrade your device. Get with your carrier, figure out how to get around this. Jump to CyanogenMod, which, by the way, CyanogenMod.org has released their one-click update. Their 10.2 is the 4.3 equivalent, CyanogenMod. Most devices that are out there on the market that are 4.2.2 compatible or compliant will be able to run CyanogenMod, and it is out there. CyanogenMod.org. Click the download or click the wiki to make sure that you're compliant. Now, I will endorse CyanogenMod. I used CyanogenMod for a very long time. However, when I went to the Note 2, Yes, CyanogenMod is compatible with the Note 2. However, MHL Export is not a compatibility with my device. So therefore, I need to go on a different ROM. Hence the reason why I use Jedi X, because Jedi X supports MHL Export. And that's where I need to be. So moving over, Geek.com, they actually went in and broke down Google Experience Launcher. And as of 14 November, if you have the new Google Search app, you can download the Google Experience Launcher, henceforth dubbed GEL APK. You can sideload this app and utilize the Google Experience Launcher. Simple requirements, need 4.1 or higher, and you also need the new Google Search, which would have been updated in the Google Play Store 14 November. So go into your Google Play, check your Google Search app, make sure it is the one that came down 14 November. This came down for me yesterday, and I located the APK, of which you can just Google install Google Experience Launcher, APK, and you'll get a couple different ways to download it. You can download it and then sideload it. I don't suggest downloading it directly to your Android device because I tried it a couple different times off a couple different sites. It did not work, but I downloaded it on my laptop and then sideloaded it, and it worked just fine off the same sites. Okay, so just be careful, be cautious. Go ahead and launch it, and what that does is that gives you full embeddable customizability. Google Now. It's listening for that OK Google, provided the fact that you're unlocked. It will respond. This is where trusted Bluetooth technology comes into play. Remember I was talking about the watch? Remember I was talking about the credit card? Yes. Those devices, trusted Bluetooth devices, are paired with your phone. You can utilize OK Google, and it'll work, provided the fact it's on and it's unlocked. Okay, trusted Bluetooth allows your device to remain unlocked. Remember that. So you swipe all the way to the left, you got Google Now sitting right there. Instead of having to put the widget on the desktop, there's different ways to install widgets on the desktop. It took me all of about, 10 minutes to get the thing customized to where it operates properly for me. I had a couple different widgets that I have to put on. I got my Beyond Pod I got to put on, I got my weather widget I got to put on, various other things like that. But I don't have to worry about having all of the extra stuff right there that tends to cause problems and create issue for me. All right, but the bottom line is Google Experience Launcher is out there, and right now it looks like it's working all right. I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again, I don't like TouchWiz, which is the Samsung experience, Samsung UI. Those of you guys that are out there that are on Sans or the HTC or the LG or whatever it is, you know, it just give this a try. It's actually pretty good, and it's built in to the 4.4 update. I have been using Nova Launcher, to be honest, and I liked it because it's about as close as you're going to get to the Google experience. But with this now Google Experience Launcher that's out, I'm actually liking that. It's pretty cool, you know? I mean, it gives that flexibility, and I like it. I mean, it's now granted, the example that they'll use on a lot of these video blogs concerning the Google Experience Launcher is an HTC One. Now, granted, I don't have an HTC One, but it works just fine. So give me a little bit of time. I got a feeling it'll come up again next week as I have Mr. Old School on, and I'll be able to give a better breakdown. But I'm definitely looking forward to being able to experience this launcher a little bit more, a little bit better, and more from there. Now, something else that's been coming in is the Nexus 5, this coming in from Business Insider, quote, Nexus 5 is the only phone you should buy if you truly love Android. Now, I have seen plenty of articles that come out, usually composed by Apple fanboys. This, however, is still composed by an Apple fanboy, but it is written from the perspective of an Android user. Citing, quote, Nexus 5 isn't as beautiful as rivals like the HTC One or the iPhone 5S. In fact, it's rather unassuming looking. Plain rectangle rounded corners covered in comfortable rubbery plastic or white. Won't turn the heads and make any bold statements carrying around the Nexus 5, but its guts are what matter. If you're a spec geek, the Nexus 5 is a dream with 2.3 gigahertz quad core, 2 gigs of RAM, and one of the best displays I've seen on a smartphone. Much similar to the flagship G2. Now, the screen is almost a full inch larger than the one on the iPhone 5S. The body is small, but still manageable with one hand. Only complaint with the Nexus 5 hardware, despite the ho-hum design, is the camera. Side note, Nexus typically has problems with the cameras, just so that you know. go ahead and get back to it. Part of this is due to slow camera software on the Nexus 5. This will be hopefully fixed in the near future, but photo quality is still pretty poor, especially when snapping color images. Another side note, typically, yes, they do. They're grainy, especially if the scenery isn't that slow or things like that. Sporting events sometimes, low light, etc. Yeah, that happens. But however, in conclusion, Google Nexus phones have always been the best Android experience, but they never seem to hit the mainstream the way iPhones, Samsung, Galaxy, Nokia, Lumia, Windows, etc. Part of this could be due to lack of carrier partnerships. Insert rant for Verizon here, which will be at the bottom of the page. Part of that could be because Google only sees its Nexus phones as demonstrations of what Android is truly capable of, if only other manufacturers like Samsung would slow down and listen. Now, here we go. Verizon. The Nexus 5 is not available on Verizon. It is available on CDMA, but for Sprint only. Verizon, for whatever bullshit reason, has decided that they are still not going to certify the Nexus 7. And I believe, as true with the article that Brian and I discussed when he was on, they have found a, quote, problem with the Nexus 7, to a point where Asus and Google said, okay, stop trying to certify it. But let's back up here and look. The Nexus 7 has been on the market for now 9 weeks, I believe. And Verizon, for whatever garbage reason, has decided not to certify that device for whatever reason. To a point where when the Nexus 5 came out, it wasn't even on the Verizon roster. Google came out and said when they released the Nexus 5, it will be available on AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, U.S. Cellular. No mention of Verizon. Now, Verizon is CDMA, so therefore, sensibly speaking, if you were a Sprint customer and you got the Nexus 5 through Sprint, you could take it to Verizon if you had a working SIM. The odds of that actually working, why would you want to pay the fees for Verizon, is beyond me, but at this point, Verizon is shooting themselves in the foot, despite any leaks that Google says we are, quote, working on some deals with Verizon. As far as I'm concerned, Motorola Droids aren't that popular. As far as I'm concerned, Google could just be taking the high road on this, because Verizon has done nothing but prove to be pains in the ass and ultimate demonstrators of douchebaggery when it comes to their resistance to Project Nexus. I have not been a Verizon fan in a very long time, and there's a reason. Number one, customer service sucks. It does. And it's not just because their customer reps have their hands tied. Their customer service training is designed to walk you as the customer around and around and around and around and around in a circle until you get so frustrated you give up and then you let it go. Here's the thing. If you're on Verizon and you want the Nexus 5, you're not going to be able to get it. So here's what you need to do. Get out from Verizon and go someplace else. If you prove that you can stay with Verizon and utilize their service despite this douchebaggery, that is on you, because it's not going to do anything except get worse. Here's what Verizon's problem is. They want control of Project Nexus on their network, and Google isn't giving it to them. Sorry, you can either play the game or not. I told you earlier tonight, I went into multiple different carriers. I had money in my pocket. I put it on the counter, said, I want to buy a Note 2 outright, and I want you to unlock it for me. Verizon was one of those people that looked at me and said, I'm sorry, sir, we can't do that. You're going to turn down $1,000 that are sitting on the counter right now to perform a simple service that I could do myself? I don't know what to tell you. Verizon is exercising or trying to exercise power and control that they don't have. They want it, but they can't have it. So they're going to come up with every little stupid, idiotic, micro-synchronous, obsessive, compulsive, moronic, ass backwards philosophy and belief that they can come up with to stand in the way of their customers and the devices that their customers want. End of story. I know I'm sounding really ranty. I know I'm sounding like I'm really up there, and I'm just... Some of this stuff, though, folks, I mean, there's a reason why I'm not a Verizon customer, okay? A, because Well, I'll just go ahead and get into this right now. A couple times a year, a few different companies, they go out and they survey the land, the continental United States, to see what carriers are good and, you know, give their objective presentations. Obviously, Verizon, they do have the largest network, but their speeds aren't what they should be. Overall, market share Verizon has gone down because of their douchebaggery with Project Nexus. I mean, they have yet to register Nexus 7 LTE version for the 2013, and the Nexus 5 isn't even on their network. Two major strikes. I don't care what anybody says. Project Nexus is popular in the developer community. Developers are all over the place, all right? Nexus is big. I don't care what anybody says. The fact that it hasn't sold out yet is beside the point. But Verizon needs to get their head out of their ass on this one and get the game together. If they can't keep up with it, of which they've already proven that with the Nexus 7 2013 edition, they can't. I have a feeling that they're about to get rolled out here when it comes to Nexus in the future. Unless they do something really big. I mean, their numbers are already starting to go down. Their size and their ability to not be contended with, this power has gone to their head. They're too big to fail. Yeah, right. Robin Williams would look at that and say, it's like you're saying you're too fat to diet. I mean, you know, you either get on board with the program and work with it, or you forget it, and it looks like they're being forgotten. All right, what's going to come next? Samsung, maybe? I don't know. Samsung's got their Tizen project that looks like it's going to be moving on forward here. So maybe they won't bypass on that one. But, I mean, Verizon market share is going down. Their overall reliability is there, but their speed, generally speaking, based on the Nexus 4, they have a late model Nexus 4. They have a Galaxy S4. They have a Galaxy Note 2. They have an iPhone 4, an iPhone 5C, and an iPhone 5S. Okay, those devices were all tested. Of all these devices, average bandwidth was less than 8 megs a second on the Verizon 4G LTE. And this is a national thing. They check this all over the place. All right? Number two, AT&T. They are continuing to expand their LTE market. While they are still a little bit pricey, they do still continue to dominate the LTE market. They do still have holes within the nation, okay, some dead spots. But if you can get the AT&T brand and the AT&T service where you're at, you have a very good thing. Overall rating within the devices utilized within this, over 15 megs a second transfer rate on the LTE market. Now, Sprint, which is currently number three, is going down because, quote, if it sucks, it's still going to suck. Now, granted, Sprint did put in their Spark network, which at this point in time is 8x8, but, I mean, in majority of the places where they tested Sprint, they had to leave their location to find a Sprint network to exercise this test. Leave their location to get on the Sprint network. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm on T-Mobile, and they're up, by the way. They're up by a lot. Their Un-carrier push is really going. Now, based on what I pay $70 a month. I get 12 gigs of 4G LTE. I brought my own device. I had to enable AWS, which is Advanced Wireline Service, okay? I don't get the customer support that I usually would get because this is my device. It's rooted, it's ROMed, and they know that, all right? There is, where I live, there is a line, and it's highlighted by the interstate. Anything inside of that line is on the 4G LTE network. Anything outside of that line, you're still on the T-Mobile network, but you drop down to edge speed, all right? So everywhere I go, I still have T-Mobile data. It just depends on how fast I get that data. It's proven reliable. Very seldom do I get no data available, but it works. If you're in a situation where you get T-Mobile LTE, it works. If you're in a situation where you get Sprint, that Spark service, that dizzyingly fast Spark service, or whatever you want to call it. Here's the thing. I haven't met a Sprint user for a very long time, but here's what I'm running into. With the Sprint Spark service, yeah, sure, it's 8x8. Yeah, sure, it's offering greater than 50 megs a second transfer rates. Yeah, sure, it's rated as the fastest within the North American area right now. However, if you've got a crappy network and you can't utilize the speed, what's the point in having the service? See, Sprint has fallen under this delusion. They got themselves a little bit of money from SoftBank, and they think that because they can throw money at a crappy network, they can make themselves look better than they actually are. Wrong answer, all right? I know people from all across the nation. I know lots of people from all over the place. Yeah, sure, they can make phone calls marginally. Do they get data? Yeah, sometimes. They spend more time with their devices on Wi-Fi. Why? Because their data on Sprint, no matter where they are, whether it be at school, whether it be at home, whether it be traveling, it doesn't matter. It's marginal at best. That's what they say. They don't like it. They're waiting for their contract to expire so they can get off it and go someplace else. There's one person in one of my classes, actually, I got to talk to. Multiple conversations with this individual. They got on the Sprint because of the unlimited plan. Didn't realize until after the fact that they were throttled after so much time, which didn't bother them. They just found ways to work around it. But now they're dropping calls all the time. Their devices are out of date. They're not getting updates. I mean, you know, if your network sucks already, you think it's going to, what, you think it's going to get better just because you're offering 8x8? Now, back up. Spark service is based on 8x8, and I've said that a couple different times, and here's what I mean by that. Typically speaking, on LTE, okay, when you're on LTE, you have one line of data that comes to you from the tower, and then from the tower it goes up and then down and then off. It goes like that, right? Single line. 8x8 means just this. Instead of having one line of data coming to you, you could have up to, not guaranteed, but up to 8 data streams coming from the tower, and then 8 data streams going up to the satellite from that tower or to another tower. 8x8. That is fast, because if I'm getting 15 megs a second right now on AT&T, multiply that by 8. Guess what? Whammo! I'm downloading a lot of stuff. However, with where I'm at, and this comes straight out of a Sprint store. Not even joking. You walk into a Sprint store here in Illinois, every single one of their devices is logged onto the Wi-Fi. You ask them to take it off of the Wi-Fi so you can conduct a speed test, and anybody in that store will look at you like you are out of your damn mind. Now, you tell me what sense that makes. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it goes down to show that Sprint isn't even confident in their own network, that they won't allow their devices to be on their own wireless network. They have to switch their devices over to their own Wi-Fi in store in order to provide an adequate demo. I didn't believe it when it was told to me. You go into a Sprint store, their phones are on Wi-Fi, and they won't put them on their network. What? There's a Sprint store right down the street from the university. I went down there, dropped in there between one of my classes. Sure as anything, every single one of their devices was on Wi-Fi. Hey, can you do me a favor? Take this off of Wi-Fi so I can check your speed? Nope. Excuse me? I am a potential customer here. You know, this goes back to the unlocking device thing. Doesn't make any sense to me, you know? The whole thing is... Now, granted, there is a great chasm that's between Sprint and T-Mobile, but with T-Mobile being the Un-carrier, they are continuing to close that gap, and they're continuing to get better, and they're continuing to make improvements, and they're continuing to grow, and they're continuing to expand, and they're continuing to appeal to the average customer. They're continuing to get better. Sprint? Okay, Spark, 8x8 service. I don't get good Sprint service now anyway. You think it's going to get better with 8x8? 2 times of nothing is still nothing. 8 times of nothing is still nothing. I mean, how else can you look at it? Okay, yeah, sure. So they're offering 8x8 service in Chicago. That doesn't help me down here. Chicago is 3 hours away from where I'm at. Now, yes, quite often... My Note 2 on T-Mobile bounces off an antenna that comes out of Chicago. Where the antenna is in between here and there, I don't know. But there's a lot of times where I can go in and I can do some tinkering around and I can figure out what antenna I'm bouncing off of primarily. And I primarily bounce off of Chicago. Every once in a while, I'll switch over to St. Louis. Sometimes there's an antenna in Springfield that I bounce off of every once in a while. But primarily the time I bounce off of Chicago. Does that bother me? No, it doesn't bother me. But see, here's the thing. If I switch over to Sprint and they got their 8x8 service, and I know plenty of people on university campus who are on Sprint who hate it because they have absolutely no service. They get poor self-service. They get their text messages, reasonably speaking, but they have virtually no data. So they've got to stay logged onto a Wi-Fi in some way, shape, or form. Now, granted, on the university, we have Wi-Fi everywhere. everywhere, right? But the problem is, if you're paying for data service and you can't use it, what good is it? That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you're paying for a service. You're paying to utilize a service. You're paying for data. You're paying 60, 70, 80, 90, whatever the price is on Sprint for an unlimited package. You're not able to use it because you got crappy data. So what are you paying for? Terminate the plan, get a voice over IP app and utilize that. Google Hangouts just started integrating SMS. Why not use that? I mean, I can make phone calls. I can initiate Hangouts. I can initiate text messages. I can initiate Hangouts themselves off of the Google Hangouts app. So why do I need data from a company that can't provide me data? I could switch my device over to Wi-Fi and be fine that way. Now, do I need to do that? No, because I'm content with the T-Mobile service I'm getting. I got T-Mobile. I'm paying $70 a month. I don't care. It works the way it's supposed to. Now, granted, I work on the other side of the interstate, but I'm still on edge speed. It means I can receive my email. I can receive my text messages. I can receive my Hangout notifications. I can't do heavy surfing, but why should I want to? For the simple fact that I'm there and I'm supposed to be working. So therefore, why should I care? But the bottom line here is, if you've got a bad service, wouldn't you want to worry about making that service more reliable for all your customers instead of giving some of your customers faster service? I mean, yeah, sure, 8x8, that's great if you can utilize it. I mean, if I were in an area where I had a good Sprint connection and I was able to utilize 8x8, you better believe I'd jump to that. But where I'm at, Sprint sucks. Sprint sucks for a majority of Illinois, unfortunately. I mean, would I like to see that change? Oh, I'd love to. But the reality, not so much. So what's the bottom line here? Verizon's going down because they made a few bad decisions. Duh. I mean, if you can only refuse Nexus for so long before it starts to affect your numbers. And like I said, despite what plans are in the works with Google, I don't think it's going to be enough to save them from this. So I have a feeling that pretty soon Verizon's going to be down in number two. AT&T is looking better. They're still overpriced as far as I'm concerned. Yep, overpriced. That's how come I'm not on AT&T. Now, granted, they have a decent service. Don't get me wrong. They got a real good service. Sprint continuing to fall down. They're not learning from their mistakes. They need to put some money into their network. They need to get off the CDMA. They need to get 100% converted over to GSM. They need to get rid of their HSPA Plus. They're trying to play the game and trying to come out ahead, and all they're doing is winding up putting themselves further down. 8x8 service, big deal. Big deal. Talk to a guy like me who looks at stuff like that and says, okay, it's 8x8 service. Can I utilize it? Well, let me see here. Which way did it go, George? If I can't use it, why do I want it? If I can't use it, why do I need it? Convince me that I need it. Convince me that I'm going to be able to get it greater than 50% of the time. Nope. Actually, if I'm going to pay that money for 8x8, I better be able to get it 95% of the time, no matter where I'm at. If I can't, tough. I don't need it. Nobody can convince me of that. Matter of fact, most of their sales reps don't even know what 8x8 service is. Sorry for them. T-Mobile's on the rise. It's going to continue to be. It's going to continue to get better every time they make an announcement. They continue to make the customers happy. T-Mobile's out there. They're here to hang around. They've proven they've gone through their restructure or whatever they went through, and they're getting better and they're getting better and they're getting better and better and better. And that's a good thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. T-Mobile wasn't always that, but if you look at their map, you look at their coverage map is right. They're planning on having more rollout, but they're going to do nothing but get better. Depending on where you live, T-Mobile could be a better choice. They cover majority of the nation with at least their edge speed. You know, make sure you're familiar with the device that you're bringing to their network, unless you're going to get one of theirs. I mean, you got to know what you're doing with them. I'm rude. I'm wrong. I had to enable AWS. If I didn't know how to do any of that, I'd be kind of screwed. I have this great big old expensive device on a network that doesn't really do that well. I've got AWS enabled, and guess what? It works pretty good. I mean, I get between 3 and 5 all the time, which is fine for me. Sometimes I can get up to 10, depending on the night, you know? So what are you going to do? What's the bottom line? Verizon's going down, AT&T and T-Mobile's going up. Sprint, they're going to be gone. Unless Sprint does something in the very near future to prove to me that they're going to be around for the long haul, I have a very confident feeling that they're going to be gone within the next 5 to 10 years. Am I still going to be doing this podcast by that time? God, I hope so, because I really enjoy doing it. You know, and to be completely honest, I am past by 60 minutes. You know, I only wanted to be on here for about 45, but I got on a couple high horses. I got on a couple rants. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for hanging out with me and hanging tough. You got to hear me spout off on a couple different things. You know, next week, provided the fact scheduling works out the way that it's supposed to, Mr. Old School will be here with me, and I'm looking forward to have that too. He'll be on here for episode 62. Really quick, make sure you're checking us out, TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. That's probably where you found me right here, right now. TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. We got great shows, Fight Show Live, Spanish Announce Table, Old School at the Movies, Real News. All these shows bring their own thing. I've got a bunch of guys who like doing what they do. I mean, Old School and his panel of critics this past last week, They broke down the Resident Evil series, and I'm a fan of Resident Evil. I'm not big on the games, but I do like the movies. I'll admit it, okay? Fight Show Live, MMA enthusiasts, Spanish Announce Table, TNA, WWE. I mean, I like listening to all these shows because it's diversity and it's variety. Yeah, I listen to tech shows as well, but I mean, I listen to these for other entertainment. And I tell you what, it is entertaining. It gives the good information. It helps you understand more. You know, so make sure you're checking us out every day because you never know what's going to be trending next. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you all so very much for hanging out with me on episode 61 of Trending Mobile Technology. Catch me next week for more tech. I am Piper the DJ, taking a bite out of the mobile space. Good night.